Hey there, ho there, you're listening to Super Tool Shed, the only podcast where two guys bullshit for an hour on Skype, and is called Super Tool Shed. I'm Bennett the Sage, I'm joined by Mark the Engineer, and today marks the reemergence of our little podcast that could, after an hellacious month of episodes. Not only that, but a new Arkham game has reached shelves, and we have story. But first, the pleasantries. Mark, how have you been?
Shitty. Oh my god.
Do tell.
Well, first off, if nobody noticed, we actually had one video episode of Super Tool Shed. Isn't that interesting?
I was in Baltimore for a song, as it were. I was at Elisa's wedding. And, you know, Maven of the Eventide, for those of you who may not know her by her real name. I had a nice, albeit short time in Baltimore. Didn't get to explore the city as much as I'd like to. Although, as I've come to understand it, there's not a lot of parts of Baltimore that should be walked in. But, you know, I drove by Camden Yards. I saw the Ravens lose to the Green Bay Packers, so that's always nice. But I had a nice time. Met a bunch of Channel Awesome people there. Went to see Poe's grave. Actually, the two got married at the, Westminster. They called it Westminster. And they actually do have Edgar Allan's rotting corpse in their yard. That's their claim to fame. And I really don't understand why they want to get married there, but whatever.
Yeah, we'll see what happens when you want to get married, and then you're going to be like, I want to get married at this terrible anime director's gravesite. Let's do that. Yeah, we had a video episode of Super Tool Shed. I drove an hour and a half from Philadelphia to Baltimore in the middle of the night, which is always great in the freezing rain.
You're black. You can handle it.
In my rear-wheel drive car. Just so that I could see Bennett in person for the first time since MAGFest 9. No, MAGFest 10. It was MAGFest 10 because it was the year it was in the Gaylord.
Yeah, MAGFest 10, and back then we didn't really know each other, so he saw me, I didn't know anything about him, which at the time probably suited you just fine.
But. Oh yeah, totally, because I've already told that story, but really the truth is that I was writing you fan letters. So that was really interesting, but honestly, if you didn't watch the video episode of Super Tool Shed, essentially we got hammered this month with a high ambition of projects, which we might want to try and rethink preemptive planning before we ever do something like this again.
Especially not colliding with each other as much as they did. In one month, we had a crossover and a non-traditional episode of Anime Abandoned.
And a con.
That convention was out in September. That was not October.
But really, it did kind of knock a whole weekend's worth of work out. Where it's like, oh yeah, let's just not be here. Well, for you it was let's not be here. For me it was fucking hold down the fort while Bennett goes and has fun with his girlfriend.
And you have a way of making me feel bad for enjoying myself. You know that?
Well, happy birthday, Bennett.
You're 2 days late on that, man.
No, I already gave you your happy birthday, but I'm giving you a happy birthday on the show because somebody wanted to have a party and a tasting on his birthday because his birthday is so important. It's so important that Bennett was born. Let's just hit the brakes on all fucking work that needs to get done for a day. That's me making you feel bad about enjoying yourself right there. But then you enjoyed your fucking scotch or your, what was it, 15-year-old? What brand of whiskey is it?
Macallan. 15-year-old Macallan. And I have my last glass in my hand right now. And I'm sipping it because October is behind us, for better and for worse. And we worked our asses off to get these episodes out in the condition that they are in right now.
Yeah, because despite what you might think, we really do not do any drinking on this show until today, because god damn, was October insane.
Mm-hmm. I have a feeling December is going to be worse, but at the very least, one of the episodes will have sound in it.
Yeah, we can. I mean, yeah, we're going to have a commentary, but not everybody's going to watch the commentary, so.
So, yeah.
We can talk about that a little bit later in the show as to why it is that the Guyver episode didn't exactly go to plan.
And talk about some of the, I don't think talking about the controversy surrounding that episode will fit too much into the commentary. So I think we can address that here. But before that, I wanted to address the first episode of the month, which I believe EYESMRs.
Yep.
And how, like, if somebody, like, after, you know, debuting it and after a few weeks has gone by, I can rightfully say that's probably my least favorite episode I've ever made. Not that I'm not proud of it, but it's just, it was a combination of the wrong subject material and not the right way to go about it.
Okay, this is the first time hearing this.
Well, I know, because I needed a few weeks to really recollect on it. And I look at that episode and say, well, you know, I had some good bits here and there, but it used to be that my least favorite episode was probably one of my first year. I forgot the exact title of it. It was so bad in my point of view that I didn't even bother to remember which particular one I didn't like this much. But EYESMRs, I feel like I approached it wrongly, because I look at it today, right now, and I'm just saying, no, it's not nearly as funny as I would have liked it to be. It was as funny as I could make it, given the deadline and given the circumstances, but it does not stand up in my mind.
Well, it's every once in a while an episode I think is going to be a casualty to whatever the fuck else we're doing.
And that was definitely EYESMRs. That had to be banged out so we had enough time to take care of the other two episodes.
So, yeah, thanks for all the views, but yeah, that one's totally shit.
I wouldn't say it's totally
shit.
No,
it's not totally shit, but no, I'll tell you where the shit lies, where we're totally in fucking trouble. Because everybody just saw right through it. Fucking Guyver. Which I want to state for the record, not my idea. Wasn't my idea. That episode was written 95% in a vacuum. And let's just go down the list of everything that went wrong with that episode. Because there's going to be a commentary for that episode too. For some reason we're doing a lot of commentaries in the month of November, but yeah, we can very safely, with our intimate audience that is the Toolshed audience, hello Toolshed audience, share with you, the people who we trust the most, exactly what went wrong with that episode. Number one, I was nowhere near that episode when it was getting written.
True. He wasn't, and usually I bring him into the writing process after the script is finished, and what he'll do is like, there's a better way to word that, there's a better way to restructure that. He's the punch-up artist as far as the writing process is concerned, but what happened in that script was that I had an entirely different ending. I meant for it to have the same kind of tone, but when Mark heard that, and wisely stopped me from putting this ending to the paper. I'm not going to go into detail about what that ending really entailed, but it came off a common criticism of that ending was that it was way too mean-spirited and way too down. Well, the other ending that I had planned was even more dispiriting than that. And I guess you could chalk this up to me wanting to do something different for a crossover ending than is the usual wave making crossovers. And I think I went too far in that direction. So that ending, it has been deleted. There is no record of that ending ever existing, except for here in this Toolshed, where it will remain, Mark.
Except for, you know, in Doug's inbox.
I don't think Doug bothered to open that, so.
But it's there. It's there. It exists. It's... It's, trust me, kids, this ending is real, and it is real fucking dark. And the words that I used explicitly were, "Are you having a problem? Why did you write such a navel-gazing, woe is me ending?" I couldn't believe it. I was genuinely knocked on my ass, which maybe speaks to the power of the ending itself, but it's kind of like putting Citizen Kane in the middle of Tiny Toons. Like, you just don't fucking do it.
Well, the idea was that, one, I wanted to address the issue of why the fuck in the anniversary specials in on Channel Awesome, why am I just like a normal dude, but everywhere else I'm like fucking Satan? And I always thought that, well, the only way to kind of alleviate, or at least kind of navigate through that labyrinth that is Doug's writing for me, was to say that two different Bens, as it were.
Which, considering that there's enough setup for the multi-review universe, fine, that worked out well. But this ending just came off as really fucking bad. So I browbeat Bennett for probably about 10 straight minutes. Which I feel bad about. I always feel bad about it when I gotta like drop the hammer and be like, "Look, you are not doing this. You're not the guy." And that's going around a lot lately. Is this prevalent sort of thought in our writing process where it's like, "You're not the guy. I'm not the guy. We're not the guys. We'll do it, but we totally shouldn't be doing it."
Well, and also I felt that this not doing something that left on a happy note, but more on a bitter note, not a very conclusive note, but a very bitter note, kind of opens an interesting path to, like, doing maybe Dark Hero, Guyver 2, somewhere down the road. I can't say for sure when, because I don't know when mine and Doug's schedules will line up again, like it did back in early September. But, excuse me. But, you know, that will make for an interesting kind of, I want to say narrative, but that seems way too high-minded for what it will ultimately wind up being, but it will make for an interesting twist. Instead of just being like, "Hey, we're in a hotel room again. Why don't we just, you know, sit on the couch and talk shit about a movie?"
Yeah, and Guyver 2 will happen. It will happen. Yes, we know it exists. We're not sorry we didn't make Reanimator jokes.
Oh, God. All right. To the people who have been telling me, like, "Why didn't you make any Reanimator jokes?" Like, okay, one, I didn't see the movie, but I read the fucking short story. How many of you fucks can say that? Huh? Huh? That's what I thought.
Dropping the gauntlet on Fangoria fans, huh?
I don't know. Like, all right, I did not spend so much money on the Necronomicon for someone else to come up to me and say, like, "You don't know anything about H.P. Lovecraft." Like, fuck you! Mountains of madness.
All right. you got it worked out there, Benny?
No. I'm still bitter about this. Okay? Yes, there were two actors from this one really, really cheesy movie that was based off an H.P. Lovecraft serialized novel. It's like, yeah. And David Gale, by the way, I did some research on this guy, and he may be probably the most underrated hammy actor that I have ever seen. I mean, like, everyone goes off about Nick Cage, and I'm like, "Oh, he makes crazy eyes, and he does all this crazy hairstyles, and oh, and he's great." Like, David Gale puts Nick Cage to shame. Like, putting David Gale next to Nick Cage is like putting, like, Diet Coke next to Coke.
Or New Coke next to Coke, or Crystal Pepsi next to Pepsi.
Mm-hmm.
Well, all right, so the first thing that went wrong with Guyver was the writing, which I did my best to force him to salvage, which is why it is that Abair gets the last laugh in the review.
Well, he sort of gets the last laugh. I still get the last line, but he gets to act like the jerk, and, you know, because we already established in Channel Awesomeverse that Kyle Abair is an asshole. Just ask Doug.
There's the first thing. The second thing is that the nature of it is that it's the first live action episode of Anime Abandon, which was bound to go wrong. Because Guyver, if anything, is harmless. It is a point and laugh movie, but that's kind of the same problem that it has, is that the only thing you can do with the original Guyver movie is point and laugh. There's no, you know, loud commentary that you can make. You can't expound about how, you know, about how it's worse than Baby AIDS. It's really just the most harmless thing with people in suits set to film next to Power Rangers and that Ninja Turtles TV series with Venus in it.
I will say that no, it was harmless up until the Mark Hamill cockroach transformation scene. That shit is horrifying.
Yeah.
But I mean, it was
even at that, you're only horrified by it because it's Mark Hamill. If it were any other, you know, furniture actor, you wouldn't have really cared as much.
No, I would still say that it's made more horrifying by the fact that it's Mark Hamill, but the effects of it is just would you consider like how every other alien looked in that movie and how they were ridiculous looking. Let's face facts. They were ridiculous looking, but they didn't seem out of place, any more out of place than any Ninja Turtles movie or any Power Rangers episode. However, I did not comment on this because I didn't feel like I could get away with it. But the lady Zoonoid has tits. Like, you can actually see her nipples on the costume, which I felt like probably shouldn't comment on because I couldn't even show it anyway.
Honestly, it's something that we could have done without it. It would have just been another excuse to use Sensor Kaiser, honestly, the policy on Sensor Kaiser is only if it's unavoidable.
Mm-hmm. Like, if I have to talk about a certain scene and there's like 10,000 naked women running around, you're going to see a lot of Sensor Kaiser, I'm sad to say, which is probably for the best when back in, what was it, June or July, when I had Legend of Lemnir?
Mm.
Yeah, like that, because I did some research on that, and Legend of Lemnir is done by the same guy, what is it named? Urushihara, I believe his name is. Yeah, Urushihara, who is a well-known pornographer. And so you could tell that there's a lot of boobs in that fucking anime. A lot of boobs. So Sensor Kaiser would have had a workout on that one.
So, where are we at in terms of what went wrong here? Oh, yeah, that's right. The fact that Guyver is harmless. So, with Guyver being as harmless as it is, it just kind of becomes the dry pilot for an idea that we can't really exercise all that often. Because, for instance, Bennett and I are separated by a continent. Spoony is moving even further away, which means that the what was annual torture Spoonie episode is now officially no more,
or at least is not annual any longer.
And there's just a lot of things that get in the way of doing a live action Anime Abandon episode, because I think I'm safe in saying that we'd both like to keep Anime Abandon about actual anime and not adaptations. Plus, it's kind of nice to have something waiting in the wings that's a special, because it's not like there's still a limited number of things that we can do live action episodes out of. Speed Racer, Fist of the North Star, if you want to kind of bend the rules a little bit, both of the Street Fighter movies.
Mm-hmm. Or if you wanted to, like, most people don't know that the story of Rikkyo was based off of manga, and that door is kind of open, but that's like everyone has talked about it because of the nature of the movie.
Yeah.
And I don't think I could really bring anything new to that table.
And that's a good sense of personal responsibility, which you should appreciate, people. As a dry pilot with a point and laugh, harmless movie, just everything, like, and writing that started off with good intentions but just got way too into itself, it all just kind of fell apart and burned down. And it spawned some comments that we just thought were hilarious, because while most of the people had comments like it's innocuous, who cares, whatever, review's not funny, it's just pointing to the left. And one dude just took way too much offense to the overall nature of the review, and we just could not stop laughing. Showed this comment to everybody we knew. and then we made a video out of it.
Well, truth be told, we did not make a video off of it, well, but our good friends at Bad Call TV did.
Well, you didn't do shit, but... you didn't do shit, but post it. But Locke and Jeff shot it. I edited the thing, and you just got to post it and make all the money. We need a separate blip channel just for all the other shit underneath the Bennett banner. So that way, maybe I can actually get a paycheck for once. But, yeah, this comment was just like, wow, dude, you make it out like we raped your dog.
And pimped your mom and sold her cheap.
It was just unreal. And it was going to start out simple, but then Lachlan being Lachlan just said, well, if you give me some time, I can film it instead of just doing voiceover. So that way you don't have to do any text animation or anything like that. And I said, dude, if you want to film it, be my guest. And he's like, oh, well, I need to find a location to film it, and I can light it, and we'll get it done as soon as possible. And he gets it done by the next day. And just went, now that's fucking service. I don't care what anybody says. Fucking Australians work quick.
Or at least this particular Australian does.
So that worked out. But now we're in, oh man, Twilight of the Cock.
No, wait. There was one other major thing that went wrong with the Guyver. Wait.
I'm... What?
The sound.
Yeah, that trauma. So, to tell this story quickly, everybody who's doing crossovers is usually pressed for time, which I understand, but... You've got three people in the room that do this all the goddamn time. They all have pretty much the same equipment. They're all using the same cameras, the same microphones, usually a Rode video shotgun mic. And yet nobody at any point during the opening filming of this review checked to see if the microphone was on.
Matthew Bucks stated that he thought he saw me turn it on. And he was the guy behind the camera through most of that... A crossover, and I'm not throwing him under the bus, but I am throwing him under the bus.
Because it's his fault, then. If he was manning the camera, that means he was sitting behind the camera, which means that he, a person who has seen this microphone before and probably operated it before, would know that there's a little green light.
I should not, you know, be too angry with him. And I'm not. But that just made more headaches for particularly Mark here, because he was the one who had to get me and Doug to re-record our lines and dubbed our lines for... That took about, what, 2 hours per? No, like an hour for Doug, but like 2 hours for me, because me and my puppet mouth, as you like to call him. See, but part of my problem with dubbing, and Mark will tell you all about this, is the fact that I don't... It's not that I'm illegible and that you can't understand me, but for some reason or another, I am able to talk without moving my lips very much.
Yeah, fucking Muppet. Fucking Bennett the Muppet. He's got a puppet mouth. Because here's the thing. Doug's never done, like, proper ADR. Like, I actually set up scenes, set up the beeps for him to chase and everything like that, explained to him the process, and he took it like a fucking champ. And he was in and out of what we're calling the booth in about an hour and 15 minutes. Bennett, however, is a whole lot harder because his mouth doesn't move. And he's just the best ventriloquist I've ever seen. Using himself as a puppet, it was amazing. And there was just no way to make his... And I apologize, but it's really not my fault for the fact that Bennett's a Muppet. I apologize that there's just no way to resync Bennett's audio. Bennett's audio is just a moment in time. When it happens, it happens. And if you don't get the recording of it to join the video, then it's gone forever. So what we end up with is this weird chop socky opening where Bennett's mouth is just lethargically moving like he's not even acting. And in the meantime, there's a performance coming out of your speakers, and you're just kind of going, is Bennett telepathic? Is he speaking directly into my brain? But that's just the way it went down, and I was so pissed. I was even more pissed when I found when I watched the blooper reel and I found out that he knew. He made it out initially, like he got home, checked the footage, and the footage had no sound, and he was like, "Oh no." But that's not what happened. What happened is that they caught themselves in it, and nobody could just make the time to redo the damn shots. Everybody's time is so fucking valuable, but not the engineer's time. Fuck no. Let's take up all of his time so that he can run two ADR sessions, resync fucking everything, add Foley where necessary, so that way I can create layers of sound to cover up this massive fucking mistake. Yeah, totally cool. But that you're right. That's the biggest fucking problem with the Guyver review, and it's fucking Film Brain's fault.
I'm just saying that, like, for a guy who volunteered his services for this particular episode in the first place, you sure do like to complain about the work you yourself volunteered for.
Okay. There is a level of reasonability when it comes to work and volunteering and the balance therein. I've had plenty of people go like, "Oh, you shouldn't complain. You volunteered." It's like, look, for someone to volunteer does not make them your fucking slave. There is an unreasonable threshold, and when you cross it, then that means that you are either inconveniencing that person or you are driving them nuts. And there is just a level here where, like, of course I volunteered to fix it. Because if you tried to fix it, you would have driven yourself nuts, and that would have taken away from the time you have to write or to edit or whatever the fuck else it is that you have to do on your end. And I shoulder these things in order to keep your life easy. Because nobody likes it when all of a sudden you got to hit the brakes on everything you got to do. We've all had that moment where it's like, God damn it, I wish I had somebody else to do this because I've got other shit to do. And then I'm going to have to play catch up, and I'm going to be playing catch up for like a week, 2 weeks, a month. We just had that happen because we both got into it and it was like, fuck, there's not enough of us. We need like six extra hands. But I complain scenarios where I volunteer because most of the time the things that I offer to help people with is either they bury the lead on how bad the problem is or they just keep tacking shit on. And this just what got tacked on here is the fact that you've got a puppet mouth.
Like it's my fault.
I don't understand this thumb twiddling looking at your fucking feet style of acting where your mouth doesn't move. So yeah, that was a big problem with Guyver. Now we're smack in the middle of Twilight of the Cockroaches, which is the train that got away. It is
as far as you're concerned, but the response that we've gotten so far from the episode has been made. The majority of it has been positive. A few screws on the loose, but that comes with the nature of the episode.
That comes with the territory in general. But this was an idea that we had months ago, where in one of our bantery moments, we had said like, "Oh, wouldn't it be funny if we did like a whole episode based around the critic and you were Jay Sherman?" And then you had to throw me under the bus. It's like, and then you could be Duke Phillips. Like, fuck me. Because it made the most sense because there's no black people in The Critic. Not really.
Unless you want to count that Fox parody, like, booty, booty, booty. Mm. Yeah, boy.
And I think remembering back to that now, I think that was Phil Lamar.
Yeah, well, the time would have been right. It would have been Fox in 94. Yeah, Mad TV.
Yeah.
Yeah, it would have been around at the same time.
So, and this train just got away where it's like, okay, we can't not do this now. And there have been multiple stopgaps where Bennett has said, "Mark, are you sure you want to do this?" And for lack of any better ideas, like, you know what? In a vacuum of ideas, we got to do it. So that means I got to be on camera, which I hate being on camera. I'm a voice actor. Like, I don't want to be on camera. And it's not something like, oh, please don't look at me. But it's just kind of thing like, I don't want to, you know, be in your face or presume that you want to see my face. Like my voice, sure, why not? There's no harm in hearing my voice, but
you have a very velvety smooth voice.
Thank you. But
it's like putting your dick in a Muppet's mouth.
Fantastic. Great image to give everybody in the middle of the night. But yeah, it's always been sort of my failing where as an actor, I'm not the type that goes like, yes, absolutely. You want to see my face. Why wouldn't you? No, I'm like, you know what? We can just talk on the phone. We can talk on Skype. I don't need to turn my webcam on. Do I really? God damn it.
And so the episode's unleashed, and one of our favorite comments that we've gotten so far is this really misinformed kid who had no idea what the fuck we were doing, as far as I can tell. Like, he probably never seen The Critic or even heard of The Critic in his entire life, and he presumed that the character that Mark was playing was a legit original character, not like a parody. Or
which or an homage. Here's all the white guilt in the world coming at you. It's funny because a black person is calling someone boy and saying, I own your ass. So satirical, so funny. Not only is he unfunny in his bossiness and clearly bigoted and dumb to be hanging around Rush effing Limbaugh, and he only cares about the lowest common denominator in terms of jokes. If he was trying to set African-American characters back 50 years, he succeeded admirably. Never, ever have him do that character ever again in the name of all that's holy.
Wow!
I want that on a t-shirt. But the next Hackhammer Press shirt under the Ben the Sage imprint is that fucking comment. Right there. Seriously, we should just have a shirt sale of shirts filled with like the top 10 weirdest comments on BenTheSage.com. It'll be like the top 10 things I learned from video games, but stranger.
Like first off, we get this comment about this really out of proportion negative comment under the Guyber video, and then this. I almost want to say that this guy must have been like 15 years old, spends like half his life on Tumblr for social justice causes, sees this, and just completely shits himself. It's like, I feel offended for everyone.
Like, seriously. And I only preface this with the whole white guilt thing because he says African-American characters. It's like, look, you only say African-American if you're a white guy taking up a black cause, or if you're Louis Farrakhan. Like, that's it. Black people don't call other black people African Americans, not to my knowledge, not coming from Philadelphia.
And I'll say that, like, that is probably the most misguided label for everyone involved. Because, yeah, all black people have to come from Africa, right? Never mind the fact that black people could come from the Caribbean islands or any of the South American countries. And no, they also have to be American. So, God, he just was in a movie today. It was just a movie that was released, like 12 Years a Slave, that actor.
Yeah, I don't know. I know of the movie. I don't know who's in it because I generally don't pay any attention. Like, when the commercials where the butler came on, I was like, wow. That is a whole lot of I don't give a shit.
Well, the main actor is British, so calling him African-American would be just like punching him in the face.
Wait, is that a Chiwetel Ejiofor that you're talking about?
Yeah, I think that's his name. Yeah, he's British, so if you call him African-American, you're an ignorant asshole. That's what you are.
Just as a bullet point, he was the bomb in Kinky Boots, just saying. Like, everybody else is going to be like, oh, man, he was the operative in Firefly. No, if you didn't watch him and Nick Frost and Kinky Boots, you are deprived. Watch that shit.
I guess I'm deprived because I have not seen Kinky Boots.
It is funny and really just it's a really engaging movie where Chiwetel Ejiofor plays a transvestite.
Oh.
And it's like in the premise, like part of the premise of this movie is that transvestites at the time couldn't get shoes or boots for their attire that could support the frame of a man in terms of like density and weight. So just all the shit goes, like, it's amazing. Just fucking watch the movie. But yeah, Chiwetel Ejiofor with the bomb and kinky boots.
I have not seen a black transvestite since that actor who played Mercutio in Romeo plus Juliet.
Oh, God.
Oh, that brings you back, doesn't it?
So much. Fucking Loving Basketball and shit like that. Just remember when all those movies used to come out? Fucking Loving Basketball and Romeo plus Juliet and...
And Oh.
And Oh, God. Oh, God.
Oh, and what was it? 10 Things I Hate About You.
Yeah.
For some reason, like in the mid to late 90s, America fell in love with middlebrow adaptations of Shakespearean plays.
Yeah.
I mean, that's where we got the Kevin Klein Midsummer Night's Dream.
Yeah.
Which for some reason we set in the 19th century. I don't know why.
Because somebody was counting their money.
I suppose. So yeah, Michelle Pfeiffer and Kevin Klein in a... Midsummer Night's Dream. And
now somebody's gonna knock you for that. It's like, you said a name wrong. You said Michelle Pfeiffer.
Oh, and not to mention that the guy who plays Puck, I think his name, yeah, the character is Puck. He's also the super scientist that gave Captain America his serum in the last Captain America movie.
Yeah, he's all over the place, though. That was the guy that played Walter Winchell in the HBO film Winchell.
He also was in, of all movies, Big Trouble.
Yeah.
That Tim Allen movie?
Yeah.
Talk about an ensemble movie.
but he's one of those guys that just kind of fills in the background. And you go, oh, it's that guy. But yeah, anyway, that comment is the comment nearest and dearest to us so far. Nothing against the dude. I mean, obviously he thinks he's doing God's work, I guess. Thank you for defending me and in quotations, in air quotes, my people. but as far as we're concerned, it's like, dude, watch the critic and you'll understand. That's what I'm finding to be the problem is that, you know, I'm 26, you're 24, and what I posted on Twitter a few hours ago was that the critic, that we're getting older, the scale is sliding, and the critic is no longer really in the pop consciousness, and when we're 10, 15, 20 years older, everybody that would be our age now is going to be talking about like fucking Phineas and Ferb and Adventure Time, and we're just going to be sitting here going like, that bullshit. You don't know cartoons, man. John Lovitz and the Critic. Oh,
23 episodes of Pure Gold.
Oh man. So sometimes we gotta kind of realize that. But then again, we didn't really write this for a generation that isn't really interested in what we came up with. We wrote this chiefly for ourselves, but also for everybody else that would know it.
And I think that that's probably going to wind up being my top five favorite reviews, if only because we managed to turn what was otherwise an unreviewable anime like Twilight of the Cockroaches. And I'll stand by that. Twilight of the Cockroaches is unreviewable because of just how minimalist and how not how much of a non-presence it is.
It's anime as art in the worst kind of way. It's the brown bunny of anime.
Like, no, I would not call it's not nearly
it. Well, it is a really, like, it is a film that just, like, very clearly thinks high of itself. Thinks so fucking highly of itself, and it never once pauses and goes, this is stupid.
And let's face it, there's plenty of stupid moments, but there are moments in the movie where I think it kind of reached the lofty heights it tried to aim for. Like that scene in the Roach Motel where they're pulling Naomi out of it. You know, they're sacrificing themselves essentially to save the younger generation.
Truth be told, I fell asleep during that part.
Oh.
Because I, you know, before we wrote it, I sat and I tried to watch it, and I had to watch it in the dark because if you have even a flashlight on in the room, you can't see shit.
It was such a horrible transfer. It was,
I mean, you like, think Batman the Animated Series and season one is dark? No, they did that on black paper to save fucking money. All right, that was, but you could still make out the backdrop from the foreground, from the characters. You could still figure out what's going on in Batman the Animated Series, even on an old, shitty CRT TV. Because that's what you grew up watching it on. But this movie, oh my God, like people, like Samsung and Sony need to watch this movie and then show it to their engineers and say, this is the black we want HD to emulate. I don't care about 1,000,000 to 1 black ratio anymore. I need it this black. I want it to be so black I can't see shit going on. If I can see one silhouette, like if we put this movie on one of our newest TVs, on any prototype, and we can still see shit, that means you're not doing your job properly.
It's like, how much more black can we get? And the answer is none. None more black. But it's a slow-paced movie. It has a very deliberate pace, and there's these like moments where it's just like, yeah, like, you know, just bullshit after bullshit. But then like there's these singular moments of the movie that are just like it's like an exclamation point after a run-on sentence, and it just captures your attention. Like I said, the Roach Motel scene, and when the mayor is killed, having been skewered with a dart.
Yeah, that was just unreal. Did not see that coming. I was like, jeez. Because they're like, oh, where's Sage? Where is the person who usually does our negotiations? Oh, he's up there.
As a warning.
Like a fucking signpost in the Badlands. Keep the fuck out. Jeez, man. So
just walk away.
So this whole thing really got away from us, but in a fun way. And if there is anything that we can boast, it's that we here at Anime Abandon employ actual Australians to do our Australia characters.
It was just serendipitous that Lachlan Huddy, our good friend over at Bad Call TV, you know, subscribe now, he is actually Australian. Versus, well, I forgot, who was the guy who played Jeremy Hawk
in
The Critic?
It was all of all people, good old Maurice LaMarche.
It was Maurice LaMarche who, you know, is as American as American can be. So we thought, like, wouldn't it be great if we just got Lachlan to be Jeremy Locke, an actual Australian to play the Australian actor role? And of course, Lachlan Huddy, the genius that he is, gets his wife in on the action, so she could play viewer bait, as it were.
Yeah, for the first time ever, we have legit TNA on Anime Abandon. Zero Reynolds, who provides music for this show, watched the episode earlier today. And based on the scene progression, he said, bam, TNA and a shotgun within 5 minutes. You succeed. Like, that's a fucking review, man. If Anime Abandon were on DVD, I'd want that to be one of the liner quotes on the back of the box.
TNA and shotgun within 5 minutes of each other. Is the shotgun shooting the TNA, or
it doesn't matter? It's enough to get somebody to at least pick it up, read it for more than 2 seconds, and then take it all the way to the counter to buy. That was just really, like, we've actually gotten a lot of nice reviews about it, although it's going to get thrown to the fucking wolves tomorrow over at Channel Awesome. So that's going to be all the goodwill exists on BendTheSage.com. Everything else is over at Channel Awesome.
No. A good amount of goodwill exists over there, but that's where, like, when you cast a wide net, you're going to catch things that are undesirable. And we right now, the main site has a small, dedicated audience, and I love every one of you, but when Channel Awesome is still the majority of where I get all my views from, and with that comes the comment that we based the comment off of, and off of that comes, like, I don't get it.
Yeah.
The I don't get it. It's like, that, honestly speaking, that makes me more angrier than people just calling me a fat ass in the comments, because that's just like, how do you not get it?
Which, you know, it kind of makes us hypocrites sometimes, just because we're always the first people to go, like, don't you just hate that fucking guy who, as soon as you don't know something, he's like, what the fuck is wrong with you? But then, you know, you flip the side of the counter that you're on, and all of a sudden we're that guy where it's like, how the fuck do you not know where the critic is? Yeah, that's right, because we're in our mid-20s. We're officially in that 20-something range, and there are people
Oh.
younger than us. Forgot about that.
Forgot about the fact then.
So, honestly, because I just thought about this, like there is that fear one day that this website's going to get too big for us to moderate all by ourselves, to which point I'm going to have to start looking at who comments the most and who's the most active and start appointing moderators and shit like that. But until that day comes, I just appreciate, like I do appreciate all of you guys that, you know, like always come back to the site and like there's this one guy, Marcus, who has taken it upon himself to straighten people out in the Twilight of the Cockroaches section. Go look at it. This dude's amazing.
This guy is like my paladin right now. He is just protecting me with all his honor and due dignity.
Seriously, and I don't think I've ever seen this dude comment before. Not really. I'm gonna go back and I'm gonna check into him. But seriously, this dude has taken it upon himself to white knight all the fuck over the place. Just be like, no, this is about the critic. No, of course, Ben is still with that guy with the glasses. You need to calm down. It's not supposed to be this condemnation of a black character. Like he's just pinballing all over the place, and I love this dude because he. My position is one of, you know, like look, I'm not going to directly talk to anybody in the comments unless you say something really funny, because I don't validate bad behavior, and I think that in part validating bad behavior is like dropping the ban hammer or deleting comments or shit like that. Like I just kind of let things happen as they happen. But if
Unless, oh, wait, we have to put a pin in that comment. Unless what you're saying is like racially charged or just outright filth,
like
we
hateful.
have
Like
like
really,
hate.
really fucking hateful. Like,
Like even that comment that we featured on the comment, I don't think we would have deleted on our site.
no,
No, but
not
it has to be like something like threatening or racially charged, or
where
at
it's just
least.
going back and forth and it's really going nowhere. Like then there's some intervention required. But other than that, I'm very, because I'm the one that's looking at the comments more than Bennett, because Bennett's fucking writing, so. And I'm the web monkey, so it's kind of like a hands-off thing. Like I'll just let you guys do what you do. But if somebody else wants to like jump in and be like, "No, let me explain what I think and my perspective," and so long as you're right, be my guest. Knock yourself out. Good on you, Marcus. You're the fucking paladin of Ben the Sage.
As long as you're
Like as long as you're right.
right.
Look, I can't have a paladin going on the countryside speaking the gospel, and then when they come back, and then when he has all these converts come back to the church, all the converts are like, "So where's the free ice cream?" The what?
That troubadour is in trouble.
Like, we were told that if we joined the Church of Benetopia, that we would get free ice cream. And we're starving because there's a blight on the countryside. Aw, you motherfucker.
And I almost thought, like, wait a minute, Marcus, is that you, Mark? But then I remember, like, no, you don't, you never go by Marcus.
No,
I was like, wait a minute,
like here.
unless that's a puppet account.
No, there are very few people on this planet that call me Marcus. Which at first I used to have a problem with, but then I kind of sat and I thought about it. Like, why do people call me Marcus? Because, like, Brett Weaver calls me Marcus for some reason. And I thought, like, okay, well, if my name's Marcellus, then, and everybody calls me Mark, there's still a US at the end of my name, so they just kind of take the middle out, and it's like, oh yeah, I guess that's Marcus, but Marcus isn't really where my name fully derives from, technically. I guess technically it does, but it's Marcus, and then before that, it's Mars. So, whatever. But no, it's not me. But yeah, good on that guy. So, thanks everybody for watching, for enduring October with us. Services will resume. Pardon our dust. Toolshed fucking continues. That said, Arkham.
Well, I think we spent like a 45 minutes talking about this, so I think we got about 15 minutes to speak our mind about Arkham, and
I
neither
will
one.
speak on Arkham for as long as the rage fills me about Arkham. God
All
damn
right,
it.
neither of us have beaten it yet. I'm further behind than Mark here, And so far, I'm enjoying the game. It took me a while to get the training wheels, you know, to get used to it, because I thought for a moment that it was going to be like, not it was going away from the open world angle that it had, and it was just going to be like, you go to these locations from like the Batcave. But like, no, they just took the same model from Arkham City and they expanded it and retooled it a little bit so it looks different, but it's the same architecture essentially. And, you know, when you get through, like, once you get through the Deathstroke fight, which took me a few tries, but then I figured out the trick of, like, oh, wait, if he tries to counter, don't press triangle, wait for the triangle prompt. Ah, wow, this fight's pretty easy. You just have to hang in there.
Mm-hmm. I really enjoyed the Deathstroke fight so far. It's been the only challenging boss fight, and I'm playing on hard because, as I've established before, I don't like going through games twice unless they're really fucking good. So I'm playing the game on hard, and a lot of people were complaining about the Deathstroke fight, like, oh, it's tedious, oh, it's long. It's like, well, what the fuck do you expect it to be? The dude's as good, if not better, than Batman in from a combat perspective. But I'm just having some problems with the game that I've had since Arkham City, which nobody's really gone against me in saying so, but personally, I think that the combat system isn't broken, but it's like 90% done. The counter system just works whenever the fuck it wants to.
Well, when it comes to the knife countering.
No, because I just talked to Kerberfer about this because he doesn't play Arkham, and I just kind of had to explain it to him. Like, look, this idea of the free-flowing, free-form combat system first really showed up in Too Human, which game was clunky as shit, but good idea at the time. And then that kind of made its way through into Batman Arkham Asylum. And you know what? In Arkham Asylum is really, I think, the best the system's ever been when you compare it to Arkham City and now Arkham Origins, because the system's not getting better with age, because there's this problem where people like Bennett keep saying you can only do this for so long. And developers hear that from lots of people, that you can only do the same thing for so long before it gets fucking stale. And my perspective is, you can do the same thing for a good long time so long as it works well. Just look at Devil May Cry.
Are you trying to dig up that corpse again? You remember how much shit we got for our comments, incendiary comments, about fans' reaction to DMC?
That doesn't faze me, because those people aren't really extremely well-read. They're just only they're only concerned with their opinion. They were only concerned with their opinion, which was Dante was different, the combat system's different, the combat system is a little bit more casual than it normally would be, the difficulty isn't balls fucking hard. Like, I didn't fucking care about anything they said.
Well, let's just say, like, the difficulty was balls fucking hard in some of the other modes, like Dante Must Die mode, which was, like, what? One hit, you're dead.
Yeah, that was it. So, but the thing is, the thing about the combat system in Arkham, since Arkham City, is that in concept, in theory, a free-flowing eight-way combat system works, because it works for plenty of games, works in Soul Calibur, it kind of worked in Too Human. But when you're talking about engaging multiple attackers with this free-flow eight-way combat system, and you can't see what you're targeting, and I'm not talking about you can't see it like you can't see the enemies. Of course you can see the enemies. But you can't see what the system is targeting, because the camera doesn't center on anything but Batman, really. So since you don't know where it is that you're targeting, you don't know where it is that the system's going to throw Batman in the room, it kind of makes it hard to use the system in the first place. This gets worse when the same rules that apply to you also apply to the enemy NPCs. Because
the worst of the counter system is the projectiles. Like, if somebody's off screen and throws something at Batman, you don't have enough time to try to counter it. It's just going to hit him and your combo's interrupted. And people and your enemies throwing objects off screen happens a lot. Because you fight 10, 15 enemies at a time, like every 10 minutes.
There's always a box or a canister or something just heavy enough to fuck up your shit that they can throw in these arena fights. But that brings me on to the next worst thing about the combat system, which is multiple counter. Whenever it is that two enemies are about to engage you at the same time, the system freaks out. And it's freaked out since Arkham City. It freaks out. It doesn't know what to fucking do. It doesn't recognize that two enemies are trying to engage you at the same time. And you'll end up doing a single counter when you're supposed to do a double counter. And then you'll be countering one guy and the other guy just punches you in the face and breaks your counter. And there goes your health.
Well, I haven't experienced that myself. Every time somebody attacked, two people attacked me at the same time, I always did a double counter. That, I don't know if that's a PS3 issue or if that's an Xbox.
It's the same, it's the same system. There's no differentiation in the system. I'm telling you right now that both versions of the game do this, where the system freaks out and the counter system is not absolute. It's just the sort of vague suggestion of defense. Where I don't understand why, like, you want to know what? This game is suffering from its own age. This is the third Arkham game in which there's that pressure to make every game a little bit better than the next game. Well, what makes Batman great at all times? Gadgets. So every game, there's more gadgets. The problem is that every game doesn't come with its own controller. This was the problem that I originally saw when Madden introduced a hit stick, and I just saw all these people freaking out about the hit stick. I don't play Madden, but I know plenty of dudes who play Madden. And when the hit stick first came out, like, oh, the hit stick's broken. And then the next game came out, and there's all these new fucking features. And I realized that, you know, you guys are just playing a game where they keep introducing more and more features to a controller that is readily and steadily running out of buttons. In Arkham, all of a sudden, takedowns are hard to do, which I find interesting.
Now you got to do square and X at the same time, or circle and triangle. Although, to be fair, I never had a problem with the takedowns.
You used to have choices in takedowns, which you still do in the game. Like, you unlock more takedowns. I get that. But in the Xbox version, if you want to do a takedown, you have to use the R trigger, which... mapping takedowns to a squeezy button that is registering pressure doesn't really make sense because it's not absolute. You miss takedowns all the goddamn time.
I will say that it's probably better on the PS3 because that's not a squeezy button.
Well, there's less play in the squeeze button on a DualShock controller than there is in an Xbox controller, but that's also what makes the Xbox controller better for first-person shooters.
But that's not the issue here, is it?
No, that's not the issue in this particular case. For once, in the short list of failings that the Xbox 360 controller has directly relative to this game, and only this game, this is one of them. So now, takedowns are hard to do. Countering is less of an absolute and more of a suggestion. The knife counter barely fucking works.
Because it's so involved and it's so... You can't count on it. The best thing to do when somebody attacks with a knife, dodge roll out of the fucking way.
Yeah, just get the fuck out of the way. Because even if you manage to... Because you can do the knife dodge fine. It's the knife takedown that doesn't fucking work right.
And not only that, when you're doing that whole dodging the knife, another person can attack you, and you're already pressing triangle. So it's just become like, where's your window of opportunity to try to dodge another person attacking you?
And you have no vulnerability. That's the other thing that really pisses me off about the Arkham system since, well, really all the games. But it got really bad in Arkham City, and it's even worse now. Is that smack in the middle of a counter, some dude can just run in and punch you in the face. In the middle of a takedown, some dude runs in, punches you in the face. And it used to be that that wasn't really that much of an occurrence because when you would take people down, everybody else would just kind of be like, oh, hold on, just wait our turn. And that seems stupid, but it's sort of integral to the overall fluidity of gameplay where you can do your takedown, And then that's it. Because the thing is that you rely on takedowns because Batman doesn't get any stronger. He doesn't really get any more combat effective. It's once again, the Hideki Kamiya school of progression development.
Well, I do have a solution to that. There is a multiple takedown that is instantaneous. You just have to get a 5-hit combo going, and you take down the people that are on the ground.
But you got to upgrade out the ass to fucking get it in the first place. That's
not
way,
that hard.
That's way. Well, if you're grinding, no. But I'm not grinding, because the way that I want to play the story. Like every once in a while, I'm going to get a wild hair up my ass, and I'm going to see a group of like 5 guys, and I'm just going to be like, oh, let me fuck with those dudes. But for the most part, I'm going from checkpoint to checkpoint, and then I'm taking breaks and grinding a little bit. But I'm not grinding as hardcore as you are, where you're like, I need all the experience. I need Uber Batman by the middle of the game.
And they put a stopper on that by, like, they have a, instead of, like, you choose the upgrades, now they got a tree going where you're stopped by story progression. Like, you have this ability that you have to upgrade to get other upgrades further down the line, but you can't get it until you reach a certain point in the story.
And the reason why is because it's to shunt progression, so that way the game's not too easy too early. Because before, when it was just, you can just buy whatever you want whenever you want.
Well, you couldn't get version 4 of armor until you got the version 3, 2, and 1.
Yeah.
But that was about it. And, but, like, that's the differing styles of play here. Like, I'm taking my time with the game only because I just want to experience the world. Like, I remember a certain criticism you had with me playing certain games was that I was rushing through it because I was trying to criticize the game, or at least critique the game. Let's be fair, there is a difference. And now that I'm not doing Sage reviews anymore, I find myself just immersing myself in the game more because I have the luxury of free time that I didn't used to have.
Which is great, but when you're grinding, that's entirely different. I mean, if that's where you derive your fun, knock yourself the fuck out. I'm not going to stop you. But there is something to be said about grinding in an open world game before you're even a quarter through it. Because the game really doesn't stop you from grinding experience. You can just run in and out of areas all fucking day. If you just grapple around the city, there are fucking instances all over the place where, you know, the more combat effective you are, the more experience you get, which is really interesting that they show you how effective you are as a tactician now.
True story here, I was grinding so hard in Arkham City that they literally ran out of enemies. I could not gain any more experience until I progressed the story. I was that thorough.
But my thing is, you know, like if that's where you get your enjoyment from in terms of grinding and you know, indulging in the primary mechanic of the game, fine. But I'm more interested in the story, which is being told fairly effectively. You know, all the new actors are really fucking good.
It's like they, I forgot, Tim Conway, Kevin Conroy. Kevin Conroy is not Batman, is he, right?
No, they got someone else to be Batman, and he does a really good, young Kevin Conroy. So I wasn't really, I'm not really too upset about that. But before I get into the script and the acting, I just want to say, like, the Arkham system continues to be 90% done. It's broken all over the place. Not so broken that you can't enjoy it, but I have been stuck on hard mode in the riot scene for the last hour, because it's the first time you run into a dude who's powered by Venom and you just want to beat the piss out of whoever decided to make this fucking fight. So that said, the acting in the game is actually really solid. You see a lot of, just like nods and cool things like Commissioner Loeb.
Yeah. Commissioner Loeb. Oh yes. Anyone in, you know, is it any coincidence that this game was released near Halloween?
So
that's a nerd joke.
But Jim Gordon's in it. You actually do see Barbara, and she's walking, so you know exactly how far before critical events this is.
And also, you get to hear someone we haven't heard from since the first animated series.
What, Firefly?
No, not Firefly. The opposite Gordon. The you're like, oh, we got to catch that Batman.
Oh, yeah, Harvey Bullock. Yeah.
Harvey Bullock.
They kind of snuck him in there.
Yeah, Harvey Bullock. He's Harvey Bullock, but to me, growing up with Spawn, he will always be
Sam.
Sam.
Yeah.
But did they? Do you think Sam Keith called him Sam just because?
Probably.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, the only problem I'm having so far is that every Arkham game has some weaknesses in the script. In the first game, it was I eat punks like these for breakfast.
Which I will maintain as like it's not as cheesy as everyone makes it out to be. That just seems more like early 90s Batman.
It is, but it is though, because he never said anything that bad in Batman TAS, like at all. Ever. He doesn't say things like that. That's Adam West Batmanism. Like to hear Kevin Conroy say I eat punks like these for breakfast was just terrible. Although I did get Robert Axelrod to say it at one point. Which might have been terrible of me, but he seemed to think it was hilarious, because we were doing a podcast panel, and Bob Axelrod, sweetest guy on earth, and you know he sometimes.
No, let's be fair. Let's be fair. God, I'm blanking on his name. He was the voice of Pinky.
Oh, Robert Paulson.
Yeah, Robert Paulson. All right, like if you think Robert Axelrod is a sweetheart, Paulson is like literally the best human being I've ever laid eyes on. I was at the. I know this is kind of off on a tangent here, but I feel like I have to get this out here. I was out on a Canadian convention, and he was there, and you know, I saw something that I never thought that anyone would have the time to do, but it looks like some geek parents brought their little kid to this convention. And Paulson, who was just going to, you know, place to, you know, so he could sign autographs, looked at him, you know, said like, oh, we love you and everything. And, you know, Pinky's one of her favorite characters. Could you say hi to her in the Pinky Boys? And, you know, he played along. He made a four-year-old little girl happy. And there are a few things in this world that will bring a smile to your face as bright as seeing a voice actor entertaining a small child like that.
And that sweet moment was brought to you by Doug Walker's dog chocolate. The real chocolate taste that dogs are just dying to eat. But yeah, like Axelrod's a really just sweet, cool guy. And when we were doing this panel, we ended up talking about Batman for some reason. And he starts talking about, well, you know what Christian Bale's doing. And I went, what, Bob? And he says, he's just doing an impression of me. And you know, Axelrod sometimes looks like he's not really paying attention, but the dude's sharp. So out of nowhere, like I just had the idea. It's like, I really don't want to make you do this, but would you please read this? He says in the Lord Zedd voice, I eat punks like these for breakfast. And it's still like, and it still sounded cheesy, but coming out of Lord Zedd, it sounds a whole lot better.
Because it's Lord Zedd and it's Mighty Morphin Power Rangers.
So, but the script has one major weakness, which is the phrase talk. It's really the word talk and the permutations thereof. I'll make her talk, she'll talk, he'll talk, you'll all talk. Like Batman just keeps saying it. That he just keeps like threatening people. And just he's just so sure of himself, like, I'll make him talk. And I'm just like, dude, what if you can't? What if a person just has no vocal cords? How will you make them talk? But that's his obsession.
Like, I'll give them a pad and paper and play Pictionary.
Batman in this game is obsessed with making people talk. But really, I think the primary scripting weakness in all Batman games, in this trilogy of Batman games, is Batman himself. And all the helper phrasing, like, it really sucks how he's just caught. Like, the game doesn't even give you 5 whole seconds of standing around before Batman's like, I can use this grappling hook that I got off of Slade to run a zip line across the room and then tightrope walk across it.
I would hear that player.
I would have figured that out. You know, there's a lot of police in this room. Maybe I should use the concussion grenade. I could have figured that out.
Was that the reason why I went back to the Batcave to pick this up to not use it?
Like, seriously, I don't know. I really don't know what's worse, the helper phrases or the duration of time that the game gives you before it queues up a helper phrase. Like, meanwhile, whenever it is that you're in one of these big fucking cathedral-style rooms that are in, like, the GCPD, for instance, which I don't know how it is that the Gotham City Police Department has, one, a precinct that's as big as any fucking skyscraper, but two, has these huge fucking eloquent rooms just set out all over the place with, like, overhangs and gargoyles and shit. But meanwhile, after I clear out an entire fucking room full of these guys, Batman will sit there stone silent, and I'm like, you know, I could use some help to figure out which door I need to be going through because I'm kind of turned around now, and you fucks won't give me a map. But no, dead silent. He sounds like Batman when I need his help, and when I don't need his help, all of a sudden, he's just Mr. Chatterbox. He's the fucking question.
Are you through?
I'm done. I'm good.
I think that is all the time we have for Super Toolshed tonight. So, Mark, play us out.
All right. As always, outro music provided by Zero Reynolds. You can follow him on Twitter at Zerjester. That's X-E-R Jester. You can now take Super Toolshed wherever you go in MP3 format. Just go to bendthesage.com/supertoolshed. For Ben the Sage, I'm Mark the Engineer. Until next we beat, the shed is shut.